Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Warfare and The Amateur. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecki and super producer Craig Stanton. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
Phenomenal. How are you?
I'm great. AJ, I'm doing really well.
I love that. We're in the same hoodie for the last 7 weeks in a row.
This is my recording hoodie. I said that last time. I wear my maroon 60 hoodie when we record.
Okay.
Available on the merch shop for anybody interested.
Get a little nervous.
ShouldIGoSeeIt.com. Click the merch tab.
We love that.
Let's jump right into it.
Yes, AJ, go ahead. Okay.
I want to talk about your White Lotus orgy.
Okay, not an orgy. Let's clarify that real quick.
Just wanted to make sure.
So I did go to a White Lotus viewing party. Let me give you the overview first. Then we'll get into the viewing experience because there's two different elements here.
Okay, paint a picture.
So overview. The people were great. Everyone was very welcoming. I didn't know anybody there. Caroline and I went. She had known some of the people from a previous get-together. I was meeting everybody. And they were all very nice, very welcoming. It was in a nice apartment in South Boston.
And you're charming. You're charming to strangers. When you're on, you're
he's
on.
Good yeah. in a yeah, group, yeah, folks.
Thriving. So to make it kind of like, you know, a fun viewing party experience, a lot of us were wearing sort of vacation type garb to match the vibe of the show. We had Thai food because it takes place in Thailand, the whole thing. Caroline and I made cupcakes and we had like little toothpicks in the cupcakes with cutouts of photos of the characters, and you could like pick the one with your favorite character on it. You know, it was cute. It was cute. Then we all wrote down anonymously, like predictions we had of how the show was going to end, and we put them into a bowl. And before the show started, the host kind of pulled them out. We read them and kind of talked about it. So that was fun. And then after the show ended, we chatted, and it was all very lovely. So overall viewing experience like that, or excuse me, the overview of what the party was like was that. Questions before I get into the viewing experience, AJ?
Well, I just want to speak to the disappointing nature of the fact that it was not, in fact, a drug-fueled sex party like it was advertised. So I feel as if I speak on behalf of our entire audience when I say, boo!
Boo! It was not advertised as that, as a matter of fact. It was pushed, a narrative pushed by you two, fabricated out of whole cloth.
Those are my only comments. We can move
Thank
on.
Thank you. Now, AJ, this is where it gets interesting. As far as the viewing experience of watching a finale in the setting goes, as anticipated, it was atrocious.
You were blindfolded.
No.
I mean, you're in a room full of strangers, and they're all probably talking over each other. And they're
When
something big happens, there's gasps, and no one can calm back down so you can hear what's going on.
So, well, sir, first of all, upon arrival, I turn the corner into the TV viewing area, and I'm terrified that I'm going to end up seeing like a 30-inch Magnavox or something. Luckily,
or like the Michael Scott plasma TV that you have, that everyone's like.
Luckily, that was not the case. They did have like a big, beautiful LED TV. It was fine. So that was like a relief. But no extra audio equipment. It was just TV audio. So that was a swing and a miss.
No kicker behind the couch. No,
none of that. None of that. Then the show's about to start and the host asks if people want subtitles or not. And everyone says, yes, of course, which I know I'm in the minority on, but I hate subtitles. So I was not thrilled with that.
Group setting, gotta have that. Gotta have it in the group
setting.
You have to have it.
To be fair, like you said, in the group setting, it did actually end up being helpful because I could keep track of the dialogue while people were having side conversations, etc.
Yeah, no shit.
But still, as a viewing experience, I hate subtitles.
Okay.
But that was fine. But here was the real thing that killed me. They had sort of recessed overhead ceiling lights that never got turned off or dimmed. I was like in Craig's house, just watching the TV with 3,000 lumen full blast all around me. And like as soon as the show started, I was like, oh, they're going to obviously dim these or turn these off. Nope. It was on the entire time. So I was rattled by that.
Who could have possibly forecasted that you, Bill George, would be dissatisfied with the viewing setup of some random stranger?
No, I knew that. I knew all this going in. I'm just sharing with you. But I accepted that as part of my going to this party. I wouldn't actually be complaining about this, or else I wouldn't have gone if I cared that much. Sure. But that being said, it was fun to be in a group setting when big moments happened and you had that collective, you know, gasps. That was actually a lot of fun. I didn't feel like I needed to watch it again when I got home. Like, it wasn't that, you know, bad of an experience or anything like that. So that was fine.
Okay.
So for the right show, I would do it again. Now, if it was like The Last of Us or Game of Thrones, no chance. But for this show, it was fun. It worked out well.
I'm glad you had a good time.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for going out on a limb.
IRL Hanks. People forget.
Yeah. No. It was good. So that's what I've been up to. AJ, what have you been watching?
Wait, did anyone ask you, or did it come up in conversation that were like, oh, that guy over there with the maroon hoodie on is he's a TV and movie critic?
So one person said that she had looked up, who had met Caroline previously, said she looked up Should I Go See It, and that my Snow White review had her dying laughing. And I was like, all right.
Let's go.
I'll take that. Right. I'll take
that's
that.
A good one.
But I didn't, I didn't go around flashing my credentials around or anything like that. I didn't want to.
You didn't have one of those like old like blue helmets that say press on them, like in war photographers.
No. No, didn't do that. Didn't wear the hoodie. Didn't wear the merch. But
okay,
that was cool.
Wow. Well, good for you, bud.
Good all
I'm
around
happy for you.
All right, AJ. What about you?
Well, it was the biggest sports week in the world. It was a Masters.
This is a fun time of year for AJ and I, because AJ's favorite weekend of the year is the Masters. My favorite weekend of the year is Marathon Monday. So this is a high holiday season for AJ and I.
The 2 week stretch of our favorite times of the year. It's finally getting warmer here in Massachusetts. It's like
kinda
Masters is spring. It's springtime, and it was one of the best golf weekends probably in my lifetime. To be honest with you,
I have heard, on some other podcasts I listened to, sports podcasts, they said it was maybe the best golf tournament they'd ever seen.
Yep. Rory won. So congratulations to Rory McIlroy. Mm-hmm. Not only did he win the Masters, his first major in 11 years, 14 years, something like that, 11 years. And he has now completed the career Grand Slam. So he's won every single major.
Wow.
And on top of that, boys, my pick for the week to win it all was Rory goddamn McIlroy. So I hit a big ticket.
Rory McIlroy, now
Foxwoods.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. And I got so goddamn drunk on Sunday night that I was dry heaving in the shower Monday night because I was still hungover. Yeah. Friend of the show, Ennio Redacted Di Matteo, he went with me. He is a bigger Rory fan than I am. And we went really hard at Foxwoods, and it was a hell of a time. And yep. I think I'm good drinking and gambling for at least 3 to 5 business days, weeks, months. No, I'm good. It was fantastic. I had so much fun. I'm so glad Rory won, and it was just a hell of a weekend for me. Hell of a weekend.
Now, speaking of viewing experience, since that's the name of the game here, what's your setup when you watch the Masters? Do you do multi-screen experience? You dial it in? You're on the couch? What's the plan?
We had early in the day, because the CBS coverage didn't kick off until like 2:30. We had the computer out and our phones out, so we could kind of track the early, the early tee times. But when it was locked in, it was Jim Nance, me and Ennio, and just having a fucking day
at the sports book.
No, in the fucking hotel room. We didn't leave the hotel. We got there, checked in, had food, snacks, booze. He must have drank at least a gallon of vodka.
The whole thing wrapped at like 7 p.m. Right, so you got like your night,
yeah,
whole nights ahead of you. It's not like normal primetime sports viewing, like, you know.
Gotcha, no, it sure wrapped at 7, 60 minutes, kind of went right into it. And then we went down, had a nice steak dinner, continued drinking. And then the dice were thrown, the cards were dealt, and the slots were pulled till the wee hours of the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it. Did you watch anything else?
Yeah, I watched a Karen Reed documentary.
Wow. Yeah, we talked about that last episode. I had finished it. You watched all five episodes?
I came in halfway through the second one, but I kind of already knew the setup about like kind of what happened and X, Y, and Z. So I missed the first episode, but I watched basically from two onwards. And Bill, holy motherfucking shit. Every time.
It's a lot.
Every time I'm like, oh, she totally did it. They bring up like 47,000 examples of why she didn't do it. And I'm like, what are we doing here? State of Massachusetts, what are we doing? It was just wild. Just so many things that I didn't know about. And truly, I was like, jaw was on the floor pretty much the entire time because I couldn't believe what I was listening to and watching. So if you are local to Massachusetts, to Bill's point, you have to watch this thing. Now, I think, Bill, you made a point about the editing, how it was basically like, it was cut like it was made for TV.
Yeah, they faded to black like four times an episode.
I think they did that. I think it's probably going to be picked up from on a network perspective, or it's probably going to, something's going to happen where it's going to go to television. An edited, maybe, bleeped out version.
Maybe.
Because that's the only way that I could imagine that those editing beats would happen if it was going to go to network TV and had to fill in spots for ads.
Yeah, it's just such a, I mean, if it isn't, that's just such a bizarre choice that I did not care for. But yeah, I mean, weird. It is definitely jaw on the ground, and my understanding is her new trial is underway as we speak, so the story is ongoing.
I don't know how they're going to find an unbiased jury in the state of Massachusetts to try her.
Yeah.
Call me.
Based on the amount of coverage, it's crazy. Yeah, Craig's still in the dark over there. I'm like the one guy who knows nothing about this. I'm available.
It's wild. It's wild.
Craig, you watching anything?
Guys, I've been withholding this for the last couple episodes because Christy and I have been watching Yellowstone.
Did you finish?
We have now finished all the Yellowstones that are available to be consumed by a person.
What? Isn't that like seven
five
seasons or something?
Settle down.
Five, okay. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
But
1817?
No, we haven't done the whole extended universe of Yellowstone. Just canon Yellowstone, the show called Yellowstone.
The Yellowstone Cinematic Universe, the YCU.
There are others.
Right. Just the prime timeline.
Correct, yes. Yellowstone Prime. There are other spinoffs, which we've heard very good things about, and we will probably watch in due course. But we have just finished the main line of Yellowstone. Neither of you guys have watched it, right?
Correct. Zero. I have zero. So you finished the sacred timeline. Correct. Should I go see it?
So it's tough. I have a couple of thoughts about Yellowstone. It's a good show. It's a cool, good show. I don't know what you think it's going to be, but it is the Sopranos on horseback most of the time. Like there's mob shit, like crime stuff. It's like, it's very like rival gangs kind of, it's like very Sopranos-y at times. That's when it's at its best, is when they're like doing that. And it's a very interesting setting, takes place at famously at a ranch in Montana, not Yellowstone National Park, but like adjacent to it. Very interesting setting. Interesting, like, look, like you just don't see a lot of shows like that take place on a fucking cattle ranch, you know what I mean? So like that part's cool. Right. And interesting things happen in the show. The plot is interesting. However, my two big gripes with this program is the characters. The writing of the show seems to have gotten better throughout. Like when I first watched it, I was like, oh my God, this is not how people talk. I cannot stand this program. That seems to have subsided, or my brain just got softer as the show went on and I got used to it, but I think it did get better. So that was like less of a thing. But my biggest beef was like the characters don't change. Like every person is very like flat. There's like the one woman who's like pissed off at the world, angry all the time. She's pissed off at the world, angry all the time in every episode and every scene for every single season. Like one of the sons is like some fucking spineless weasel piece of shit. He's a spineless weasel piece of shit. Every single time he's on screen, every episode, every scene, like literally like Costner's always Costner, wistful, old, grizzled. Like literally no one changes. There's no development. There's no arc. There's nothing on a character by character basis. Again, there's a there is a plot. Like, things happen. It's not Friends, you know. But like, but the characters themselves never undergo any meaningful change whatsoever. And honestly, by the end of the show, it made me like resent them for like their actions being so easily predictable based on the fact that I've just been watching this person act in this exact same way for like a month. Bill,
two questions. One. Is the show over or is it ongoing? Like, are there going to be future seasons that you will then continue watching?
I believe it is donezo. They're just all in on the spinoffs at this
spinoffs.
Point.
Okay, and I know one of the spinoffs is, you know, 1918 or whatever, super prequel.
Yeah.
This show, the Yellowstone show that you just watched, is present day. Is that
correct? Yeah, very much so. Okay, and actually, that ties into my next and final point, which actually relates to the lack of character development, which is about, I would say, on average, 5%. Of every script of every episode is what I would call culture war bullshit, where it's like a whole scene designed around like a conversation between characters where the whole point is to like shit on, I don't know, name a thing, modernity, like the state of whatever gripey culture war bullshit thing, like, oh, people don't know how to ride horses anymore. Oh, nobody works hard anymore. Oh, things ain't like they used to be. Oh, people from New York and California come here and they ruin, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't even know how to saddle a horse. Like, all this fucking boomery culture war bullshit. You know, 5% of every single episode is just that. And it is like, it is so grating. And by the end of it, I'm like, this is such a waste of time. You spend all this time with culture war bullshit. You could be actually breaking an interesting show. And at the very end, like at certain points of seasons when they start to like leave that behind because they actually have like a show to make and it starts driving and we're like in it, things are happening, like the climax of the action of every episode is fucking, or of every season rather, is awesome. But like they just cannot help themselves. There's whole characters who exist only to get like shit on by other characters for being liberal, basically. Like it's just like it's so absurd. Like the culture war bullshit in this show is absolute, and it gets worse as the seasons go on. The writing gets better, so that problem becomes less of a problem. The culture war bullshit feels like once they found their audience, they just went double down, triple down, quadruple down on this like fucking red meat for the base, baby. It's like so, it's so insufferable. They're like shitting on doctors, shitting on teachers, just shitting on like anybody who's not a cowboy is just an idiot and an asshole and like doesn't deserve an ounce of your respect because, I don't know, you were born in the 1950s, I guess, and you like Yellowstone. So anyways, I'm sorry I have a lot to say about this program. I've been watching it every night for the last like 6 weeks, it feels like. So that's my verbal essay on the program. Should I go see it? Yeah, do it. You should watch it.
Maybe. I love The Passion, though. Love that.
Wow, I don't even have anything to, I don't even have
yeah,
anything
it's hard.
To
There's no words, really. I think you covered it. AJ, what's in the news?
Well, Bill, since our last episode, Hollywood lost one of its biggest stars. Val Kilmer unfortunately passed away at the age of 65 after years of battling cancer. Bill, how will you remember this film legend?
Yeah, sad news for sure. Val Kilmer, for me, was my Batman. He was my Batman growing
up.
Sure
was.
Like, Keaton was 89. And so that was a little before my time. So Batman Forever came out in 95 and I was 10, which is like, talk about the age for Batman. Like,
peak.
So that was my first Batman experience of any consequence was seeing Batman Forever. And I used to watch it all the time and I loved it. And that to me was Batman and it was Kilmer. I mean, the animated series started to shift that for me after time. And then obviously Nolan came along, but for the longest time, my Batman was Val Kilmer. So that's certainly like the first thing that comes to mind. After that, a couple other big ones. Michael Mann's seminal classic Heat. He's fantastic in that, and that's a big part of my life. So that comes up in my mind immediately.
Sure.
His comedic chops in the movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I think about some of the lines he delivers in that. It was just a great role for him. And then, of course, he's the Iceman from Top Gun. Just so many iconic roles, and 65 is just too young for a star like that who could have very well kept going and kept killing it. So very sad to see him go. But those are like the ones that jump out to me. Batman, Heat, and probably Top Gun. What about you?
I think he missed a really big one, and it could be just the fact that I did a lot of drugs when I was in high school, but he was Jim Morrison. Like, he was Jim Morrison in The Doors, and he did an incredible job portraying him, and that is always stuck in my head. And the second one is Tombstone.
Oh, yeah. Such a good role in Tombstone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So he was my Batman. I agree with you. But him as Jim Morrison and him in Tombstone is something that I will always remember for Val Kilmer.
Yeah, Doc Holliday. I remember that. He was
Doc Holliday.
Yeah, fantastic in that. Yeah.
Yep.
Love it. All right, AJ. It's finally happening. It took 100 years.
You're getting married.
that's good. But the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences will finally recognize stunt work beginning in 2028. The official name of the category is, quote, Achievement in Stunt Design, end quote.
Okay.
So, AJ, they've missed a century of recognition. So looking back, what are some movies that you would have given this award to if the award existed at the time?
Any Buster Keaton movie who basically invented stunt work in modern film was Buster Keaton. Second, every single Jackie Chan movie fucking ever, especially the ones from like 1980 to like 95.
Yeah. Yep.
Not even a question. Like, they should give up. Like, they should give, what's it called when you die and you get one in reverse?
Posthumous.
Like a posthumous achievement Academy Award for stunt for Buster Keaton. Definitely. They should give one for Jackie Chan. And then here's a weird sneaky one is Tony Jaa, the Thai martial artist who did like Ung Bak in those movies.
Ung Bak, Thai warrior, like, yep.
That dude must have broken like every single fucking bone in his body because he did everything by himself. And those movies are fucking crazy to watch.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I grew up on Jackie Chan as well. Rumble in the Bronx, Operation Condor, Police Story, like just Super Cop. Yeah, yep. Just the best.
Even the first two like Rush Hour movies were insane.
Yeah, sure.
Like climbing up the side of a fucking building and scaffolding and dudes are just like eating shit on top of cars.
It's a good one.
Sell it. Book it.
Yeah. No, good picks. Good picks. For me, the first thing that came to mind is Mission Impossible. The whole franchise, but particularly Fallout. Like when I think about the stunt design of that movie, like you have the free fall sequence, you have the bathroom fight, you have the car chases, you have all the helicopter stuff in the finale. Like that was like the first thing that came to mind is Mission Impossible Fallout, big time. I would also say Mad Max Fury Road. As far as stunt design, Matrix Reloaded, like when you have the highway, they constructed a highway loop that they could just film on to do like the highway chase. Like that stands out to me as a great stunt design, plus some great fights in that movie. And then the last one, probably the Daniel Craig, James Bond movies, like Casino Royale in particular has a bunch of awesome stunt work, whether that's chases or fights or the parkour running sequence or the airport sequence in Miami. Like there's just a lot of great stunts in that as well that I think would make it a good candidate. So I was thinking a little more modern, but you bring up some great historical points as well. So very excited.
That you can't go back in time.
I know. 100 years later, but they finally are going to do it.
What's up with the 3-year wait? Why not just do it next year? It's literally a hunk of metal. What do we
do? I don't know. I wonder if that is to make it on the 100th year, to make it ceremonial sounding, because that'll be the 100th annual Academy Awards.
Understood. Okay.
Yeah, the 2028 will be the 100th Academy Awards.
That's a ridiculous reason, if that is the reason. But I see no reason to wait 3 years. Like, just do it.
I didn't see a reason in the article. They just said that it'll start in 2028. So, at the 100th annual Academy Awards. So, we'll see. But I guess it's a better late than never situation. Stunt people deserve recognition for everything they bring to the movies, because that's half of is putting asses in seats is these large format movies that have these awesome stunts that you want to see in theaters.
Okay, boys, this week we're going to be talking about two films. The first is Warfare. According to IMDb.com, a platoon of Navy SEALs embark on a dangerous mission in Ramadi, Iraq, with the chaos and brotherhood of war retold through their memories of the event. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. It will raise your blood pressure, but yes, it is a heck of a movie. I mean, it was directed by Alex Garland, who's one of my favorite directors, and it's an A24 production. And it takes place, like you said, in Ramadi, Iraq in 2006. And there's a great young cast in it. You have Will Poulter, who we talked about during the Death of Unicorn review as like the best part of that movie. He's in this. He's very good. The lead from Shogun is in it. I forget the actor's name, but I recognized him from that. And there's a bunch of other like young, recognizable actors in it. And so they make up the SEAL team. They take up sniper positions to support a Marine operation. Iraqi insurgents kind of get wind of their position and eventually push them. And then all shit breaks out. And they basically you basically are following their attempt to extract. And like you said, it's based on a true story, and they say that it's reconstructed from the memories of the people there. And in the end credits scene sequence, they show some behind the scenes footage as part of the end credits, which is always cool. And they basically recreated or went to a location, and the niece, there were like two at least SEALs that were at that mission that were on set with them, like showing them, okay, so then we run out here and we do this and aim here, and like just telling them what to do to reconstruct it from their memory of the mission. And they just recreate the entire thing. And so,
yeah,
really cool idea. Super intense, super visceral. I would say it's even more intense than something like Black Hawk Down, which is kind of an easy comparison, because it's so much more intimate and close in, because you're on one small group and that's it. Like in Black Hawk Down, you're kind of jumping between a lot of war movies, you're kind of jumping between, you know, the generals who are trying to figure out what to do, and then the guys on the ground, and then the air support. Like you're cutting around. This movie, there's barely any cross-cutting at all. Like, you are just with these guys in this building trying to survive. One thing they do cut to that's really cool is every once in a while they cut to, like, the AC-10 thermal cameras of, like, looking down on the scene, which helps kind of show the battlefield from above, so you get a better view of what's happening around them, so it's not too claustrophobic. Like, you have an idea of where things are pushing in on them. And so that's obviously really cool. I mean, it's badass. A lot of the times, it feels like, you know, Call of Duty or Full Spectrum Warrior if you've played those games. But it's also, on the other side of it, it's also absolutely terrifying and haunting. And you know, I think they do a good balance of tone, because a lot of times these war movies can end up feeling like recruitment posters, so to speak. This is not that.
Just
like, this
over-the-top action movies.
Right. Yeah. This definitely strikes that balance of showing their competence and showing the heroism and showing all that stuff and courage, while also showing the horrors of war and how absolutely devastating it is to all parties involved. So they do a nice job maneuvering that. And so, yeah, I thought it was really, really good. Very hard to watch at times, but still incredibly well made and just incredibly well put together.
Well, my only question, and you kind of touched on it, was, is this the Black Hawk Down of this generation?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely make that. You could make that leap if you think about, like, there aren't, I'm trying to think of how many. I mean, I've seen a few different movies about, like, the Iraq or Afghanistan wars, but I haven't seen any quite like this in terms of the groundedness and the boots on the ground, visceral nature of it. I feel like a lot of the other Iraq and Afghanistan war movies are more bigger picture or more political or more, Hollywoodized. This one was definitely, this is definitely the closest we've seen for this particular type of warfare. So, yeah, I think that's an apt comparison.
Was the theater packed? Was it a pretty good showing?
Not really. I mean, it was a Thursday night first show available. So it was like a third full, but I will say you could hear reactions from the crowd in terms of like some gasps or some like, cause it's just such an intense movie. And there are times like in a lot of war movies, an explosion goes off and the sound kind of gets muffled or the sound cuts out. And so in those moments I could hear like people like in the audience sort of reacting or breathing or whatever the case may be. So it definitely, not for the faint of heart, but if you are interested in this type of movie or, anything to do with this, I think you'll get a lot out of it.
It's crazy that Alex Garland followed up a war movie with another war movie. You don't really see that often, of like going back into the genre that you just did, but I think the fact that it was co-directed and co-written by someone, a vet who was there,
yep,
just probably tells you how passionate he was about it and making sure that it was done right. And from all the behind the scenes stuff that I saw on YouTube and that was on TV, it seems like they did a really good job of like,
yeah,
real, quote unquote, as possible.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a passion project.
Crazy.
I want to try to see it before it leaves theaters, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna have to have enough time.
Definitely, that's definitely part of the yes behind it. Is I feel like a theater experience is the way to experience a movie of this sort of intensity.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The second film is The Amateur, or Amateur, according to IMDb.com. When his supervisors at the CIA refuse to take action after his wife is killed in a London terrorist attack, a decoder takes matters into his own hands. Bill, should I go see it?
I gave it a no. I'm going to be honest.
Ooh, a no. Okay.
Be honest.
Give me that no.
I'm going to be honest. So,
hate it when you lie on this podcast. Hate it.
Yeah, right. Rami Malek stars in it. It's like an old-fashioned early 2000s type of throwback type spy thriller. I was very excited about this film. I don't know if you guys remember, I texted you like as soon as I saw a snippet of the first trailer, I was like, all right, I'll watch this type of movie for sure. I'm into it. So I went in excited, but it ended up letting me down a little bit. So he's a CIA intelligence analyst. His wife, played by AJ, your girl, Rachel Brosnahan, is killed in a hostage situation in London. The agency wants to focus on like the bigger picture and not necessarily go after the low level people that did it. Like they want to take down the whole structure, whatever. And Rami Malek, decides to use his own particular set of skills to take matters into his own hands, which is all well and good. It's a fine premise. Malek's good in it. There's a lot of character actors in the movie that are all pretty good. They actually let the dead wife thing breathe a little bit in a lot of movies. That like happens instantly and then you just move on and that's the motivation. But like they actually take some really good beats in this first act to like let that sink in. There's some good emotion in that opening act. I actually appreciated. But I'll give the rest of the positives first. Direction is fine. There's some neat set pieces in it. Actually, I guess that's the end of the positives.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Seat was comfortable. Theater adequately dark.
Yeah, I mean, it was a full house.
He's just a weird, weird fucking dude.
What's
man.
The most he's normal weird. Character he's ever played?
Freddie I don't Mercury. Know. I'd have to look at a list. I'll get back to you.
Freddie Mercury or the bad guy in Bond.
Yeah. There's only like one or two laughs in the movie, which... They could have done a lot more with him making amateur mistakes along the way as he learns to be a spy. They could have balanced the tone a little bit because it's like overly serious given how silly some of the concept and the hacking is, which is another issue. It's wildly unrealistic, like the hacking, the tech side of things. You kind of just have to give yourself over to that or else you'll lose your mind and just you got to go for the ride, which I was able to do. But the movie is also PG-13, so it kind of has one hand tied behind its back the whole time. It's like very particularly bloodless, it feels like. I don't know. The whole movie is just like aggressively mediocre. Like it is perfect for viewing on a plane. But the pacing in the back half could have picked up. They could have done more with the actors they had. The writing, the action could have been a little spicier. I just found the climax underwhelming. It's just not that good. It's just not that great. It's fine. It's not bad. But it could have been great if you had someone like Martin Campbell directing it, or if the script had another pass, or if it was rated R. Like, they could have done something with this premise. Instead, they made a mediocre, aggressively fine shoulder shrug of a spy thriller.
Wow.
Talk to me about
you love spy
Barenthal films. And Lawrence Fishburne.
Fishburne's pretty good. Barenthal is barely in it, so don't let the trailers or the ads fool you on that one. It's...
Sick.
They made sure to put him in there because Barenthal's a good name, but like he's in maybe three scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So what, yeah,
what's Fishburne's deal? Is he like his mentor?
Yeah. Amateur? So when he decides to go through some of the training to actually become, you know, field ready, they give him over to Lawrence Fishburne to be his trainer, knowing that he's going to be such a tough trainer that they think he'll quit. They don't want him to do any of this, for the record. So they think that Fishburne will push him hard enough
that he'll quit. Let me pause you there. Why would the CIA be like, hey, we're going to put time and resources into this fucking desk fucking jockey nerd boy to be an operative field op to avenge his dead wife, which is small potatoes on the collateral damage terrorist scale?
I can tell you that it is part of the plot, but it happens in Act One. So I don't know if you want me to tell you. I won't get specifics, but as an intelligence agent, he has certain information that gives him a leverage over his superiors to force them to do that for him.
It's all about leverage, AJ.
So he blackmails the CIA to be able to start killing people.
Kind of.
Wow.
Again, I did say it was wildly unrealistic at all times.
Who's the director of the CIA in this? Who's like
actually
the
great point. Great point. Well, the full director of the CIA is I forget the actress's name. She's in that show Paradise. She's very good. But his like supervisor is played by Holt McElhaney, who from Mindhunter and Lights Out. And like everything he's in, he makes better. So like he was a great, like I said, a lot of great character actors in this show. So Holt McElhaney shows up and he's gets to be kind of a smarmy guy and he's great.
Speaking of Holt, we touched on a last episode about tomfoolery around April Fools. You know which one got me? I saw post that was like Mindhunter got renewed for season 3.
Oh, dude.
That's not even creative. Yeah. That's not even April Fools. It's just a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
brutal.
Now if I'm angry only. And sad.
Brutal.
Okay, so Rami Malek's weird. Rachel Brosnahan is one of the best people that has ever been on this earth. John Barenthal, one of the also best people who've ever been on this earth, but he's not in the movie. And the plot and premise is fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, that sums it
okay.
up.
Okay. All right, boys. On to so again, watch Bill, it on, what are we watch watching on TV?
TV. Let me see. I talked about the White Lotus viewing party, but let me talk about the actual finale. It was good. I thought it was a nice way to wrap the season. I think season 3 is my favorite of the White Lotus seasons, and I really enjoyed it. So there, thumbs up for the White Lotus season 3 finale and season. I'll say that.
Right here, folks.
BG guarantee.
Last of Us season 2 had its premiere episode.
How was it?
Who else has watched it here in the chat?
That's me.
Craig.
Last night, Craig. Watched it.
Craig.
AJ didn't get to it yet.
How was it? No, dude, I told you I was barely.
Oh, right. Dry heating shower. Right. Got it.
AJ was walking around Foxwoods like one of the clickers on Sunday night. Last thing he was doing was watching Last of Us.
I thought it was excellent. The acting and the production design, everything about the show continues to be absolutely like top notch S tier production. And I do think that the events of the second game, which will now span at least 2 seasons because they already renewed it for season 3. So the second game is longer than the first game. So I understand it going across 2 seasons. And I do think the events of the second game will actually make for better TV than the first game, even though as a game, I prefer the first. So I'm really excited to see what they do with it. They already have made one change in the storytelling narrative in particular that is like very surprising to me that they changed. So I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Okay.
But it's very good, of course. Craig, as a non-gamer, I don't know if your reactions.
Well, I do have a game-related thought, which is, as someone who did not play the game, the story of the first season is much less like deeply ingrained in my head. And Bill, you and I were texting about this, I think, before the premiere. I wish I had planned ahead and done a rewatch of season 1.
Yeah.
Did that with Severance, had a blast during the rewatch, had a blast during season 2, like really was an awesome couple weeks of TV viewing. Was very lost, despite the recap that I watched. Was like extremely confused for the first 25 minutes. And then they just sort of shifted to stuff that wasn't really connected. They just like basically went on an adventure. And I was like, okay, well, I'm in on this adventure. I don't know. I'm like, fuck. I feel like I need to kind of play catch up a little bit. But other than that, I thought it was great. I think it's going to be a fun ride.
I also watched What's getting a lot of buzz, very buzzy show these days, is Adolescence on Netflix.
Oh, how is it? I have it queued up. I have it in the next thingy.
Oh, you got to watch it for sure from a technical standpoint. So it's a 4-episode limited series out of the UK. It's about a 13-year-old boy charged with murder, and it follows that story. There's only 4 episodes, but each episode is one take. And so I obviously was naturally very curious about this, and I found out through a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff and some other like YouTube videos, it is a true one-er. It is not a fake one. I kept looking for like hidden edits. Wow. Where did they cut this? Like, and I couldn't find like many. Like, there's maybe a place or two where I was like, they could have made a cut there, but like it was pretty smooth. Turns out they didn't. Like, it is a true one-er. And so they did like a month of rehearsals. Then they did a month of rehearsals with tech. And then they did a month of shoots where they did like 2 takes a day for 5 days. So like each episode, they basically had 10 tries at it. Crazy stuff. They do use a little CG to like, if they have to pass the camera through a window, they use, there's like nothing there where the window is, but they add CG like smudges to make it like look like there's a window there. So like they use a little like stuff like that, but they still don't cut. It's still all choreographed.
Yeah.
So so technically like I'm looking at that. As far as the actual show goes, it is an interesting story. The acting is great. The writing is great. The only thing that's like a little weird is because of the one-er nature of it, it does hurt the pacing because there are sequences where they have to travel between locations and you're literally just like stuck in a car, like driving. Yeah. And they usually like bring the music up to like add something because there's not going to be a lot of dialogue. And then they get there and they get out of the car. You're just like, okay.
Whoa.
So like the pacing feels a little weird without cuts, but it's a really interesting show. So anyway, we've watched the first 2 episodes. I got to do the next 2, but I definitely will finish. So that was interesting.
So wait. So they do a scene inside a house and then they walk out into their driveway and they get into their car and then they're just driving through fucking Swindon or whatever the hell they are for 15 minutes.
Yeah, like the show opens with like them arresting the kid and then they pull the kid into the van and the camera gets in the van with him and they got to take him down to the station. So then there's like a 2.5-minute driving down to the station sequence. And then he gets out and then they book him and they're watching the booking process. Like it follows it in real time.
That's kind of cool though.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool though.
It's really neat. It's really neat.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it. Speaking of one-ers.
Yeah.
This is going to be a weird connection, but I started watching The Studio on Apple TV.
I hear amazing things. Want to watch for sure.
Bill, Craig, crying. I'm not a big, I want to hate Seth Rogen. I want to hate him so bad. He is so goddamn good in this fucking TV show that I am crying basically every episode. But one of the episodes is called The One-er, where he is a studio exec and he's on set watching the final scene in a film that the studio is putting on, which is a one-er, which then they shoot as a one-er as the episode.
Wow. Okay. The episode itself is shot as a one-er and it's about them shooting a one-er.
Yep.
Love it.
Meta
Love
as
it.
Shit. Everyone in that show is fucking hilarious. You just have to watch it. You truly, one of the funniest things that's been on TV in a very, very, very long time.
I love it.
It's like a comedy of the bear, but it's in Hollywood with a bunch of studio executives and actors.
Okay. All right. On the list for sure. Queued up.
But on the list. Yeah.
My last one, also Netflix, and I don't have much to say, unfortunately. Black Mirror season 7. We've talked about how excited I was. I have not had a chance to watch much of it, but I did, knowing that there was an episode that was a sequel to the USS Callister episode from season 4, I knew that there was an episode this season that was a sequel to it, which is first time that's happened to Black Mirror history, as far as I know. So I did go back, rewatch USS Callister to refresh myself. And then this morning I watched the new USS Callister sequel episode. So that was great.
Were you appropriately horrified by the scene where he takes her mouth?
Yes, that was even more terrifying than I recalled. Haunting is right. And the new episode was also very, very good. And I really enjoyed it. So I still have 5 more episodes to go on the new season of Black Mirror. But that is the top of my list to accomplish this week. So there you go.
I have a question for you, Bill. As someone who's going to walk downstairs in my own home and put something on the television, would you how necessary would you say the rewatch of that first ep is?
I mean, they do have a recap built in, but for me, it was pretty necessary because not only do they follow the plot, obviously, from it directly, they also do, there are certain shots and dialogue that are like mirrors from the first episode. Like there's a lot of homages and hearkening back to certain things that happened in the first one. So having that fresh was extremely helpful. But it is more of a commitment because the first episode, the USS Callister episode's an hour and 15, and the sequel episode's an hour and a half. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot of time.
Wow.
But I did find it super helpful to rewatch it.
Gotta relive that horror.
That's it for me. Netflix and Bill
surprise.
For others. AJ, surprise. Oh, wow. I also have surprises galore. AJ, go ahead.
Boys, it's only took me 20 years, but I started watching Mad Men.
Yes. Woo. My favorite TV drama of all time. How far have we gotten?
I'm three in roughly about that.
Good.
All I wanted to do was lay in bed, reach over, have a pack of fucking Parliament lights and just smoke for fucking 3 hours straight.
Hell yeah.
I've never been that like itchy to get back into it, but all these fuckers do it. They're just drinking and smoking
and
banging. That's it. God. The end of the first episode.
Yep.
You kind of knew what was going on, but you didn't really know. But he pulls into his house and he fucking kisses his kids goodnight, and you're like, Jesus Christ.
He's got the wife and kids in the suburbs after the whole episode. You're spending like in the city gallivanting. What a reveal.
But no qualms so far. I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, it's only going to get better, my friend. Buckle up.
Can't wait. Rock hard. Craig? Your surprise.
Craig, your surprise.
My surprise is less good. I wish I went first. I am slowly rewatching the show Eastbound and Down.
Oh, goodness.
Do we remember this program?
I started it at one point to try to watch it. I maybe got to the second season, I think. Whenever they're like in Mexico or something, I stopped watching.
Yeah, the second season in Mexico is pretty good. That's as far as I've ever gotten in, and I bought the entire season, which I think is like four seasons, maybe even five, because it was like $8 on iTunes. It's fucking hilarious. The jokes have not aged well. I mean, it came out in 2008, so it's not like a lot of this stuff was like on, like generally like publicly accepted at that time either. But incredibly crass, incredibly inappropriate, but a very fucking funny show. And something that we've been talking about privately, I don't think we've talked about it on the Should I Go See It podcast, is there's this discussion about like just the way that film and TV look now, like different reasons why it's shot differently, not only the different medium, like obviously things used to be shot on film, but even just a show like Eastbound and Down was, like I said, the first season came out in 2008. I don't think they had a tremendously high budget, and they didn't even... It's not even a very good looking show in terms of like scene and setting. Like it takes place in like, you know, a fucking high school in South Carolina mostly. But like just the look, like the color of the literal things you see on the screen, like it is just a very good looking show. And it's a good example of the way that like, it's not just fucking Darren Aronofsky who was making beautiful stuff back then. It was literally everybody. It was just the standard of the day was to make stuff that looked nice. And the standard of today is like all this like very flatly shot kind of bland. I don't know. AJ, you could probably speak to it more intelligently than I can. But
you're speaking my language.
Let him
cut. I don't know. It just struck me. It was like, man. There's this YouTube video that we've been passing around between each other about how The Parent Trap is like the most beautifully shot movie of all time, or at least a good example of a style of shooting that is no longer the norm, would probably be a more accurate way to describe it. But yeah, Eastbound and Down is very fucking funny and looks very nice because they shot it like artists.
Vixens.
Yeah, Stevie, I could go on. I could give you another 10-minute rant similar to about Yellowstone for Eastbound and Down, but I'll
I fucking love
you.
That show.
So it's such a fucking aggressive show. The Danny McBride humor is a very particular thing. You either love it or you hate it. Sure, I happen to love it, so I'm having a
love
blast.
Love that for you.
Tickets here, guys! Tickets here!
I have a ticket to see Sinners, the new Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan film.
Sinners, guys? You got your tickets
to
Sinners?
Very excited for that. It's debuting at 100% Rotten Tomatoes or some such nonsense, which I hate when they do that, but AKA early reviews are very good. So I'm excited for that.
Love that.
And then I also have my ticket for Thunderbolts, the next MCU movie, which is in May, and that's kind of going to be the kickoff of summer blockbuster season when a new Marvel comes out. And that one actually seems to be like it should be a fun, entertaining, interesting movie as opposed to most Marvel movies these days. So cautiously optimistic on that one. So I have those tickets secured. A couple other things I'm eyeballing, but we'll see what else comes out.
Is Thunderbolts rated R?
I don't think so.
No, it's PG-13. What a fucking bunch of losers, dude. Mm.
But I am excited. I'm most excited to see Wyatt Russell again from his character in Falcon and the Winter Soldier TV show. I thought he was the best part of that show, and I like him as an actor. So I'm excited to see him back in that role. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Love it.
Take us away.
Let's get out of here.
Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.